Thanks for listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. 1 hour of tips from experts and real stories from people just like you. For those thinking about what lies ahead, for those going through the job search, and those who have paved the way to their next career after the military. These professionals are dedicated to helping you move forward successfully to the next phase of your career after the military. Welcome to Exchange.
Start our power hour, we always start with somebody who is in the soup, somebody who is trying to figure it out. They're flying by instruments, and this guy is certainly doing it. 9 days as a veteran, he is finishing a SkillBridge program, looking for an offer. I'd like to introduce you to John Swanson. Hey, John.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you.
I'm really interested in your story. We had a chance to talk a bit about some of the uncertainties that you're facing right now. Why don't you tell us what it's like to be in the soup?
I commonly refer to things as like a soup sandwich because that's, you never know what you're going to get. It's ever constantly moving. It's fluid. I did a skill bridge for about 6 months. So I was out of the uniform for 6 months before I was out. And after 23 years, that's a little bit of a shift. You know, I did my retirement ceremony and 6 months before I officially retired. So it was kind of like, oh, that checked that box. And you know, I went and got my retired ID the other day. That was kind of weird. It's still kind of surreal. But yeah, I'm interested to dive into it. And I'm happy to, you know, share my experience and hope that it, you know, helps somebody else as well. Hopefully, probably help me too.
I was going to say, we're here to help you as well. So you talk about something being surreal. And I would imagine after 20 plus years of being in one environment and then looking to go into another, what are you feeling right now?
It's kind of the unknown. And it's a good and a bad, for lack of a better way to say it. 20 years of, you know, somebody deciding where you're going to go, when you're going to go, what you're going to do, and then like a sprinkling a little bit of how you're going to do it when you get there that comes from you. And everything else is essentially done for you, down to, you know, here's your options of where you're going to live because you're getting a housing allowance that's based on where your zip code is. So they're limited as to how much you can do. That's kind of the adjustment, and that's kind of the surrealness of it all. It's almost like you're checking yourself, like, can I make that decision myself? Like, can I really do that? Can I just go on vacation without having to, you know, have my vehicle checked out by my staff NCO? It's just kind of those kind of things that you take for granted, but you don't realize like, wow, it really is that easy. I just want to go do something else.
At any point, has this become overwhelming?
Yes, absolutely. Every day, at least once. Sometimes good, you know, it's a lot of a roller coaster. My father-in-law and I went on go see an NFL football game in North Carolina. The idea of like leaving my family at home for 2 days to do something for myself was like, my wife's just like, yeah, go. And I was like, wait a second. Nobody says just go do something. You got to check like 17 boxes before you can actually do anything. Like I mentioned, it's, you get told where you're going to go, when you're going to get promoted, and all these things are on like specific timelines. And it's like you get out, or as the transition starts out, you end up, the canvas is far bigger than you can ever imagine. Whereas like you're in the military, you're on a pretty tight grid of left and right lateral limits of where you're going to go, what you can do based on your job or your MOS or, you know, your occupational specialty. And then you start to look at when you get out and it's all up to you. I think probably one of the things that I lean on a lot is that I might not know all the right answers, but if I can eliminate some of the wrong answers, then at least I'm moving in the right direction.
But you started your journey 18 months ago. So what were you doing? Were you researching companies, or you knew your location? Where were you at 18 months ago when you decided to drop your papers and make that move?
One of the organizations I worked with was ACP, so American Corporate Partners. I got set up with a mentor. We talk at least once a month, exchanged some emails back and forth. It was kind of my first taste of communicating with someone in the private sector outside of, never been in the military, just was in an industry that I chose when I kind of filled out a form of like, hey, this is an industry that I think I'm interested in. I want to go down that road. So that was really helpful. Another area is there's an organization called 50 Strong. They have, you know, different meetups for folks who are on SkillBridge. They have it for, you know, veterans and spouses and active duty. They have like specific employers that'll come on and talk. And they have, you know, all these different venues that they do almost weekly. That was something where, I mean, that's where I started to kind of learn, like, what is project management? What is, you know, different, all kinds of different things. Like, what do different industries do? Like, what companies have options for remote work? Like, I'm in south of Minneapolis, Minnesota. you know, what companies are global. And you'd have folks within these calls, some folks who are international, and they're like, hey, I'm getting out and I want to do a skill bridge, but I'm in Italy. How can we coordinate that? And just listening to different people, have made connections through there. You start to build yourself a network of people who are going through the same thing you are. And it's like, there's no better way to, I mean, I'm a big sports person, right? Like if you take everybody along with you, who's going through the same process you are, you share the same pain, you share the same highs and lows, even the bad team is probably going to do better than, you know, what they should do on paper. I think one other thing that I would point out too, that I did a lot of was, I mean, I got on LinkedIn, like you get a year of free LinkedIn if you're a veteran. Do it 6 months before you're about to get out. Don't do it a year out. I just read like job descriptions and industries that I was interested in to try to understand, what does one company call an engagement manager that another company calls it? Human resources. There's another one that folks are like, I did pay and allowances in the military, so I'm going to do human resources. Well, or I counseled people in the military because my job was to oversee people's careers or oversee their professional growth. So I can do HR. I started reading job descriptions, and then that made it a little easier to, in context, looking at certain companies. Like once you start researching companies and researching what people say, or like what different kind of role or how they're structured, and because those things were all new. Like I could tell you, this is how a Marine Air Ground Task Force is structured, and this is what every element of it does at a 30,000 foot view. You go to a large system integrator that works with the Department of Defense, good luck. Like they do a lot of different things, and they call a lot of different things differently. And a lot of things to somebody like me might be very familiar, but then when you get into the structure of how their personnel are structured and how they function, it can be totally different.
What was your MOS?
Communications chief, and then my last 2 years I spent as a ground aviation operations manager. It really came down to, hey, can you manage people and projects and stuff and make sure you don't lose any equipment or break anything or get anybody killed?
And so, how different was that from what you did before?
It was a huge shift. I was master sergeant, you know, 20 plus years of experience, going to the corporal or the sergeant of like less than 6 years and saying like, how do you implement this piece, this fire truck? What does this thing do? What does that thing do over there? Because I didn't know. I'd never been in aviation. I had to go to people far younger than me with far less experience in uniform than me, right? They had far more experience in the equipment that we were implementing and how we were using it and training it. I feel like what I've learned in my internship is like in the private sector, you go to somebody and say, hey, I don't know the answer to that. Can you help me? Like, absolutely. I'd love to help you because I'm interested in that. And it's like in the military, it's like, depending on the personality you run into, it's like, wait, you don't know that? Like, why don't you know that? But some people just don't want to admit that, hey, I don't know what I'm doing.
That happens in the corporate sector too, just FYI.
Yeah.
People don't want to admit they don't know and they won't ask. Yeah. And it's just a cluster. So don't think that that's going to go away.
No.
What was your MOS before you landed in the aviation? That's my big question.
I was communications chief.
That's right.
I started in like radio transmissions, and then I moved over to like data networking and stuff. So
where are you wanting to go and do what? You know, so back up. So if I handed you, this is a chopstick, but I'm going to give it to you. This is a magic wand. I'm going to hand you this chopstick. It's a magic wand. And if you were to wave your magic wand, what would you be doing for a job?
My internship was in a role in customer success, which is a newer phenomenon over the last probably like 15 years. It's primarily like building relationships. It's almost like your company sells a product to a customer, and then with that comes an advocate for that customer back to the company. It's like doing something that it's almost like I can help build a better mousetrap. I enjoy, like, I'm not a very like handy, like I'm not going to go move electrical outlets in my house. Like I don't do electrical anyway, but I'm not going to go like building shelves and stuff like from nothing. Like I'm going to go buy shelves and hang them in my garage because they have instructions. But like a strategic like brain power type problem, I like solving that kind of stuff. I just got an email this afternoon about a friend of mine got an email from somebody else. And it's like, hey, we've got a position for a loan officer. And I was like, I don't know anything about finance or mortgages or anything else. And then I went to read the company a little bit. And, you know, it's more in, you know, yeah, you're reviewing things, but you're also looking at ways to improve other things around the company itself. That's an area that I've always enjoyed, you know, process improvement, leaving something better than you found it. And maybe that's just because I was in the military and that's the way it always is.
So talk about what you enjoyed. Again, you have your magic wand, your chopstick. What did you enjoy most about the communications field?
You really, everywhere you go, you can support any part of the military mission. I spent time in you know, East Coast, West Coast, overseas. I mean, I ended up in Iraq on a security detachment for like the couple of general officers that were in our area and distinguished visitors, ambassadors, senators, congressmen, anybody that was, you know, a distinguished guest. I ended up on that team with one other person with my background because we were responsible for handling the communications of our during our movements. Just the evolution of the equipment and the mission over the last 20 years has been, you know, it's impossible to keep up with. But I think what I really, really enjoyed about it was just the fact that I think that's kind of what drove my personality of like adapting to change, learning new things. That was a lot of fun. Because I mean, you could take the same piece of equipment to numerous different duty stations or exercises or units, and the implementation of the same simple piece of equipment could be used in so many different ways. Just because of that wasn't the primary mission of the unit. Like, you know, unless you were doing a exercise specifically geared towards making one piece of equipment send a signal to another, like that's simple. But if you said, you know, take the same equipment set and put it in an infantry unit and an aviation unit, they can be used totally different. And it just requires, it really forces you to learn and adapt and to, you know, be flexible and not just be set and this is how I do it because, you know, I'm a robot. Where I feel like there's other areas within the military that you can kind of get sedentary in what you're doing because it's just the same kind of rat race all the time. So that means some people enjoy that, not for me.
So the things I heard you say as you held your chopstick magic wand was that you liked moving around, you're a problem solver, mm-hmm. and you like the technical aspects of things. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how to implement them. So how about a device sales? Or it sounds like you want to be moving around, not stagnant, and that you really want to understand something and fall in love with it. Maybe not mm-hmm. mortgages. But sure. Know that companies are looking for people like you mm-hmm. because they need those road warriors. They mm-hmm. need those people that can make 100 phone calls a week or mm-hmm. manage 15 different things. And then when the thing, whatever that thing is, goes sideways, that mm-hmm. you are the first person they call because you know so much about that sure. thing that mm-hmm. you are, and maybe you aren't the electrical engineer that fixes it, maybe, but you know how to get that thing fixed.
I think that's something that, like, understanding an overall arching picture. I mean, my internship, for instance, as you mentioned, was in a software as a service company, right? Mm-hmm. So if you were to understand every product that was offered, it's impossible, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I heard somebody say that yesterday. Hey, look, like, nobody's going to understand every product we offer, right? I sometimes say, like, I've got a hamster, you know, running in my head, and he's got like an infinite battery. You know, he's just waiting to have a heart attack at any point in time, but he's just never going to happen. He's going to keep going. But it's just kind of, you know, my strategic, I guess, thinking mindset that I've evolved to over the years. So.
You're driven, for sure. You have probably a lot of hyper-focus, I'm assuming. When you want to learn something, you really can hyper-focus. Make sure you're drinking water. You look like you're in shape. Are you exercising? Are you balancing? Or are you really just focusing on the job search?
I still work out, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. I go early in the morning so that I can try to not be focused on whatever else is going on. Even throughout my whole internship, I was work from home, so I was pretty flexible, which is good and bad. You know, sometimes I was like, man, I wish I had some structure that would force me to, you know, be in one place and do this. But at the same time, I'm like, man, it's pretty awesome when I can go exercise in the morning before my kids and my wife wake up. And then I can like do some work for a little bit, take my kids to school or walk them to school when it's not, you know, 24 degrees outside. The flexibility to do those kinds of things. So, I mean, that's really important. It's like doing things that transcend your military life, kind of seeing where you can cross over in certain things. If it's exercise or like volunteering or coaching youth sports or whatever the case it is, like those are things that, you know, you're going to take the uniform off. Talk about in me, like, right, like I knew I was going to take the uniform off. I knew I wasn't going to see people in the military every day. I'm not going to talk to them every day. I mean, when me and another senior enlisted guy left, we both had the same timeline. And we, at least once a month for the last 6 months, we've gone to lunch or get a beer. We saw each other every day, all the time, more than we probably wanted to see each other at some point. But we both knew and we both realized that it's like good for us just to like, you know, see each other's face and continue to like do things that we did before. Like you're already changing so much within your life. Like you're leaving behind everything you did in the military. Like, you know, not saying bring all that with you into your afterlife, right? But try to keep some constant things. Like, I mean, for me, it's like going to the gym and, you know, doing other things, like doing things with my family that I already did anyway. And now it's doing things that, you know, we want to do more often, like, you know, doing things on the weekend without things coming up. I say that like it's advice for others, but I'm really like trying to say it for myself as well. Like verbally, you know, proclaim it to myself. Like, hey, take some time for yourself.
You bring up a good point, and this is something I've noticed as I've interviewed. At this point, we're at about 35 veterans. Going from we to I is very hard. Somebody said something to me, and I want to remember who it is, but if I got on a stage, they said, and talked about myself, I'd be doing push-ups for the rest of the day, because it's not about me. It's about the mission. It's about the Marine Corps. It's about the country we're in to support America. How has that process been for you? How do you go from we to I? And how hard is it?
It's really hard. For everything that I did for 20 plus years was always dependent on somebody else. Like, if, you know, my family's going to go on vacation, who's that going to impact? Like, what do I need to do before we leave for a week so that I don't inflict more stress on someone else while I'm gone? Because I'm not there as an easy button. And it goes up and down. You know, it's not like of my subordinates, how many of them are going to need my help. Of the people that are above me, am I giving them everything I can to set them up for success when I'm not there to answer a question? You know, and then it goes back to like we talked about before. It's like, you know, everything is set for you. The majority of things, where your kid's going to go to school, depending on where you get stationed, like you might not have a lot of options. Where you're going to work, those are now my choice. Do I want to pursue a job where I'm in a remote position where I work from home? Or do I want to drive to an office every day? How far do I want to drive? Where you live, where you get stationed. You know, one of the options for us was to, if I would have stayed in, we would have moved this past summer to New Orleans. So I had to think about, and then my family had to think about, okay, where are we going to live? Because in order for us to live somewhere where our kids who are 7 and 11 can go to school, and then my son's going to go to middle school while we're there, and I'm probably going to get told 3 years and you're good, then retire. Then we're gonna have to move again or stay. And so, like, you know, all the institution, all the Marine Corps cared about was that you show up and perform your duties, you know, and give everything you have, which is fine, right? Like, it's not like I'm not knocking the institution for that. That's the expectation and that's the service of it all. Adjusting to it. What do I wanna do? You know, it's tough. You'd think it'd be easy. I get to pick any job. I can apply wherever I want. I can do whatever interview I want to do. And it's like, yeah, it's easy until there's more opportunity to do things than you could ever imagine. And then you're starting to wrap your head. Then you're back into the trap of, damn, man, I wish somebody would just tell me what to do. So it's tough. And I mean, I think it ties back into like, what can I continue doing that is normal to me? I can't put a uniform. I mean, I can go put a uniform. I can go grab my closet and put a uniform on. It doesn't mean crap anymore. But what can I continue to do that kind of helps me not think about all these other things that I now have my own control over? I think that's probably the most difficult part, is that like you have more control than I think you know what to do with. And it's like harnessing that for the good is like the sweet spot. I don't know how long I'm probably forever chase that. I guess I'd rather have more control and then be confused about what I'm going to do rather than be controlled and not like it.
Right? But be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a psychological study. This is back when I was in high school. There was a group of scientists that put about 20 people into a room and said, you're going to walk into a buffet. You haven't eaten for 12 hours. And we're going to tell you that you can only eat 4 things. And there were over 100 options. You don't get to know what's on the buffet table. And this always makes me think of everything you all are dealing with. When you give people too many choices, they can't make a decision. Decision paralysis happens. And it happened in more than 50 of the participants. So then they could go on and extrapolate that, you know, going in with the mindset of what you want to do and then seeking those things is far more apt, especially people who come from very structured environments. So I hope that you continue to set those goals. And again, you know, we call this goal setting. I don't know why it looks or sounds different for those in the military. I just think that it's, you need to see all of the buffet options, right? You need to be overwhelmed before you pull back and go, okay, I'm going to use my military training. I'm going into a new terrain. I'm going to figure this out. I have to have a plan. What would your last alibi be for anyone listening who's in the soup? Who's maybe even ahead of going through the soup of applying, waiting for their internship to end and are waiting for that offer, or they're applying to dozens of jobs and not hearing back. What would you say to them?
So I'll give a shameless plug to a Higher Military, who's another organization that's phenomenal. One of the things I heard Michael Quinn, CEO of Higher Military, say, you could never have too many irons in the fire as far as like looking at it from places you're applying to or opportunities you're pursuing, right? If it aligns with what you want to do, that you're good at or your skill set matches, like you can't pursue too many options as long as they align with you, right? Like if I want to do A, but it's at 50 different companies, then that's okay. It's when you want to do A through D at 50 different places that it becomes a problem, because then you're starting to nuance to different things. Until you have a written offer letter that says a start date at a certain place, do not stop. Slow down to take a break every now and again. Like take a day off. That's also important. Put your computer over there in the corner and you shut the office door and you don't go inside. You will burn yourself out and get so tired of it that you're going to miss opportunities because you're tired of getting told no. But I think to say that, I mean, the most important thing of all that I would want to anybody else is like, continue the pursuit. Understand that whatever you want to do, it's okay if you shift that. You know, the more people I talk to from different industries, I mean, like customer success, I'll use that as an example, right? I've realized that that's something that I wanted to do more than I thought I did 7 months ago. I really enjoy it. Continue to pursue what you want to do. Like, understand what you want to do, and what you want to do can and will evolve. And like, just, you know, don't compromise your, don't bend yourself to the point where you're getting out of your comfort zone of what you want to do, but understand that those things are going to be different. It's just important to continue, keep going. And then once you find something, continue to use that same passion for what somebody's paying you to do now, instead of just, it's not going to end. Your military career ended. As much as I didn't want to believe it, you know, no matter how hard I worked, somebody eventually was going to be like, get out. It's just, that's the biggest thing. It's just continue to do. It's your choice. Do what you want to do.
I want to say thank you so much, because you've been very vulnerable and very transparent and incredibly open. And I'm going to close out this segment by letting you know that we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back with someone who is an expert, an influencer, or someone who does serve this community in a different way. Thanks to you, John Swanson. We're going to have you back after your first year. See how you're doing. Okay.
Thanks, Cheryl.
You bet. You're listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. I'm your host, Cheryl Cross. We'll be right back. This segment is truly one of my favorite ones. Well, everyone's my favorite. I'm terrible. I have favorites for everyone. But Anne is someone I found on LinkedIn. She is not only an image and personal branding consultant, but she is a very, very bright light. I was just talking with her before we hit the record button, and I had to stop because I wanted to capture a lot of this for you. I'm bringing you today Anne Stills. Hi, Anne. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you? I'm so happy to be here, and thank you so much for the invitation to be here on your podcast. I'm very pleased to be talking with you and talking with your audience and sharing my journey, sharing what I do, and just sharing hopefully some gems that they can take away and really use in their pursuit of excellence in their careers and their personal brand journey.
I've been watching you on LinkedIn for some time, and when I see you present or I see what you write, it's all very positive, and you're very focused on giving people takeaways, things they can take home to do. You shared something. You're a Navy mom. Your son is in the U.S. Navy. Thank you so much. Tell him thank you for his support. But you're also working on several military veteran programs, including the Wounded Warriors program, all the way over to Broadway. You are an incredibly diverse consultant. So you're talking to a wide range of persons and people, not just folks coming out of the military. And that's what I like about you, is that it seems like personal branding, image consulting, it runs across the board. It's not just for those who want to be a certain way. It's for everyone. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing for those programs, and we'll go on from there.
Cheryl, you're absolutely correct. Personal branding is absolutely for everyone. And guess what? Know it or not, everyone has a personal brand. A lot of people don't recognize it, but they all, every single one of us, we have a personal brand. It's our reputation. It's a reflection of who we are. And as Jeff Bezos said, it's what people say about you when you're not in the room. And the beauty of the process of personal branding is that you have the opportunity to influence people's perception of you. And how I work with in my practice to help people to influence how they are perceived is by leveraging the A, B, C, and D principles of image management. A is for appearance. We're seen before we are heard. Our appearance tells a story about us. What message do we want to convey when we show up? B is behavior. How do people experience us when they interact with us? And of course, we know that our behavior is informed by the things that we value. E is communication. Verbal communication, nonverbal communication, all of that is sending a message, sending signals about who we are and how we are. And finally, D, digital presence. We are living in a digital world. So we have a digital footprint. And so when we are managing that digital presence, we want it to be in alignment with who we are and every aspect of our personal brand. So again, in that way, personal brand is absolutely for everyone. And that's why it's been easy, not so much easy, but that's why it's been inviting for all kinds of businesses and industries to approach me. As you mentioned, I'm a Navy mom. Also, I have a sister, the Army veteran, CW5, and she loved what I am doing. And she's very much involved with this program called the Wounded Warrior Project, and she's attending all of these amazing events that the program puts on. And so she asked me if I would be interested in doing a personal branding program in the Wounded Warrior Project event calendar. And so I did. And it was very well received. It was 58 veterans. And the thing about it was they all thought that personal brand was something for celebrities.
I'm coming from the military. I really don't even like to have my picture taken, but I have to get a LinkedIn profile. I have to get my ABCD digital image going because I need a job. How would you start with somebody like that?
Well, the first thing I do is I try to make them comfortable and familiar with personal branding. Because you know what, Cheryl? They are personal branding in the military. Personal branding is about leveraging who you are and how you are to move on to the next level of your career or your success. In the military, you are trained. So you have this military identity. Personal branding is about your identity. So already the military is training you in personal branding to the identity that will work for you in the military. And they recognize that. And then you have missions in civilian life, in the corporate world where I come from. Those are called goals. So I try to use language and familiarity so that a military person or a veteran can have a comfort level and realize that it's really the same thing that they've always done, doing their best, learning more, learning about themselves, learning about what the job requires, and then doing that job. They, in the military, they have such strong core values and principles that are absolutely, how do you say, absolutely invaluable for the corporate space. They learn teamwork. They learn collaboration. They learn mission-driven, meaning goal-oriented, meaning that they will finish the job. There's so many skill sets that they already have that are easily transferable. So once I make them comfortable, the military, the veterans, you know, with that information, it's like an aha moment. And then they feel a sense of familiarity, you know, that sense of fear to something totally unknown, corporate life, which is a totally different animal. In military, it's all about the team and about service. In civilian life, in corporate America, it's about, hey, how do I promote myself? How do I get ahead? What do I need to do to become visible? What skills do I need to have? And so that is the transition that they have to make. And so when I'm working with them in my program, I'm helping them to make that transition easier and less scary.
I've heard this from so many people. I cannot speak for myself, they'll say. I speak for my team. It is we. It is the platoon. It is the squad. It is the division. It is the mission. It is the U.S. Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, the Space Force, the Coast Guard, you name it. It is not me. So this is really important that you say this because I don't think that people realize how enculturated they become into that mindset, which is great. And we so appreciate it. Thank you. Don't stop until you need to stop. But when you do need to start thinking of yourself, allow yourself the grace to do it and really explore, because everyone's different. You talked a little bit about how the interior, your interior beliefs are shown. Can you go into more detail about that as it applies to them getting to know themselves?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, people, when they think about personal branding, and a lot of people that are doing personal branding, they're talking about a website, they're talking about colors, they're talking about fonts, they're talking about all of these things that are outside of the person. My practice framework is working from the inside out. I focus on you and helping you to become the best version of yourselves, starting with your mindset, what you believe, what are your core values, how are you showing up. And in the military, again, that training that they have, service, honor, integrity, teamwork, that just shines through when they get into civilian life. It's like a light that makes them shine bright. So they can start with that and become visible and memorable, because that is who they are. That is how they are. There is no faking who you are inside. And in the military, they're trained to be that way until it becomes you, until it becomes who they really are. And it's not a fabrication of some false persona. It is an inside job of self-discovery, self-improvement, self-awareness. And so that is the framework that I use when I'm talking and coaching about personal branding. And in this way, you know, because people say, well, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of work. No, it is work, you know, because you're thinking about who you are and how you are and how you're being perceived. And you find some things that are great about yourself and you love that. And then you find some things that, well, that may not be so great. And then you have to work on that. You have to improve that. And in this way, you can amplify and elevate and define this evolving personal brand that you're discovering.
You know, I'm a proponent of getting ahead of the process so that you're not rounding the curve and then, ooh, I got to get a job and I've got 60 days left. Yeah. And you know, we've all talked about that and how tragic that becomes. Although that sometimes is people's situation if they get med boarded and they're leaving the military very suddenly. But if you have a chance to get in it, like say in a lesson with you, how far in advance of them leaving the military would you suggest that they start looking at your program or working with someone like yourself?
I would say 6 months prior to what they are really their mission that they're trying to accomplish. Because I said A, B, C, and D. It's a lot of work in terms of defining and refining who you are, and then becoming visible. And the first thing that you have to do, if you're not already on LinkedIn, because really that is the professional platform for any military person seeking a corporate opportunity to go on. I swear by it. It's really the professional platform. There are over 1 billion people that are on LinkedIn and hundreds of thousands of corporations. So it really behooves the military veteran or the person that is getting ready to transition to start building their personal brand on LinkedIn. And it starts with having what we call a fully engaged personal brand profile, meaning every single box on that profile is completed. Everything. One of the most important things to do is to start writing original content. And with the military person, guess what? They can start writing about what their experience was in the military, what it taught them, and what they can bring with all of that experience. Because really, what they're needing to do is convince people to recognize their value. I mean, that's what personal branding is about, convincing people to recognize your value. And what better way to do that than to tell stories, to put all of your skills and your experience, document that on LinkedIn. So when they're working with me, that is one of the first things that we do.
Storytelling is tough for some people. How do you get people to tell a story and maybe do it digitally? I have them start with the I statements. I have them speak in the first person. That is one of the exercises in my book. What's your process? What do you have people do?
As you said, you know, with the military, I mean, it's a transition from military, we, us, to corporate civilian life, I, me. It's a major transition, and they have to get comfortable with that transition. And so, again, very much like you, I have them speak in the first person, because although all of their training, all the foundation of their military life was built on we and us, they internalized what they did and who they became as a result of that. So that's what I have them talk about, who they became as a result of their military career, of their military life, of their collaboration. Yes, it was teamwork, but they became leaders. This is what the military teach them, to become leaders, to become better, to move to the next level. They must move to the next level in their performance. So they're learning leadership skills constantly.
You said something about your sister that I want to unpack. Her mission, her personal mission, it really became her stamp. So we talk about branding as something that when you walk into the room, when your sister walks into the room, does she have a presence about her?
She takes up the room with her presence. She has confidence. I mean, how can you not have confidence being a woman in the military for 38 years, leading men and soldiers? And so she just has this confidence about her. But not only that, she has a warmth about her, an approachability about her, where people feel easy and comfortable coming up to her and talking to her. Mentorship is something that I know that she didn't necessarily set out to do or even think of herself as a mentor, but that is absolutely, positively something that she does each and every day.
So if someone came to you, Anne, and said, I'm finding out things in this discovery part that I really don't like. I don't like that I'm introverted. I feel I should be extroverted. I don't like the way I smile in pictures. I don't smile. A lot of them are trained not to smile. How do you approach those problem sets for your clients?
Some people are introverted and some people are extroverted. I am an introvert through and through. I grew up a very, very shy person, but I am a learned extrovert. I call myself a learned extrovert because I was constantly put in situations where I had to be extroverted. For instance, you know, let me tell you a little bit about my corporate background. I started, you know, the job that got me out of the house, of my parents' home, as a flight attendant. I was a flight attendant for 13 years. And when I started, I was extremely shy. I was afraid to talk to strangers. 13 years of being in front of strangers and talking to strangers, I have to show up. I'm confident doing that because I've trained myself to do that. And as a result of my trained confidence, my next career was in the hospitality industry. I was in hotels. I got a job as a front desk clerk at a 4-star hotel. They recognized my ability to communicate with strangers at the front desk because I got all of these complimentary letters written about me. And so they put me in the sales office and I moved up and on to director of sales, multiple hotels. And then I put my resume out there because I was interested in doing something else. And it was for a position in banking, in financial services. We talked, we had an interview and I said, but I'm not a bank. They said, we're not looking for bankers. We're looking for salespeople. So what I want to tell the military personnel, the transition military person, have transferable skills that will serve you extremely well in the military, in civilian life. You just need to learn how to package those skills. And you do that by defining, refining, and amplifying your personal brand.
You give a lot of information away on LinkedIn, which is how I learned about you. You're very active on the platform. And I know that you're you're doing speaking engagements, you're on the East Coast, and you meet clients visually through platforms like this one. So if you had a client that came to you that wasn't in your region or wasn't in one of your conferences, how would you work with them? Would you meet with them weekly? Break that down for me.
I have multiple programs, and a lot of them are on Zoom because I have clients that are international clients. And so I have one-on-one coaching in an executive personal brand coaching program. That's a six-month program. However, I have a new signature program. It's called In a Room, In a Zoom, Image Matters.
What are your thoughts on that little round picture that people have? What do you tell people to put in that space? Is it something I've seen people with their spouses? I've seen people with their children. I've seen people with their dogs or cats or animals. How do you work with clients who maybe are coming to the table with what you call the wrong image or maybe not the appropriate image? What are your thoughts on that?
In terms of image, one of the most important things that I tell people is your image has to be authentic. It has to represent who you are, how you are, and your core beliefs. So if they want to have that flag behind them, if they want to have something in their space that represents their former identity as a military person, by all means, do it. It could be some kind of flag. It could be some kind of award if they don't necessarily want a flag. But everything behind you, it identifies you. And absolutely, I think that a military person should have something in their Zoom room that identifies this rich culture and background and duty of service and training that they have had.
I appreciate when people have prepared their backgrounds with that in mind before they do recordings. And you see that mine is very plain. I don't have any plaques. I don't have a folded up flag behind me. But for those of you who do, I want you to feel very proud of that and take some time on your space and really curate it. Because as Anne is pointing out, it's so important. You have, what, one chance to make a first impression. It's seconds. People, and we talk about bias, inherent biases, unconscious biases. You know, we can't get away from people having bias, but we don't need to add. We don't need to add to the mix. There was somebody I checked in with recently, not for a recording, but they're a Star Wars fan. And I said to them, I could never record you because all the copyright would go off because you have all this memorabilia and Star Wars and all that. And he laughed and he said, well, I want people to think I'm a kid at heart. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. That's his brand. That's what he wants to show, that he really loves collecting. And you know, maybe I wasn't recording him, but I was enjoying, and he was showing me all his trinkets and things that he'd collected since he was a kid. But that was his youthful spirit coming out. And that's what he really wanted to convey. For those of you listening, take a minute to take a screenshot of whatever is in your Zoom or Teams or whatever. Call me up and I'll look in your background, or call Anne. She'll take a look. So if someone wanted to work with you, how might they find you? Would it be LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is always a very, very good way to find me. And also my email, my LinkedIn profile is my name, Anne, A-N-N-E, Stills, as in Sam, T. I-L-L-S, and still, and I welcome any opportunity to talk to anyone that is interested in personal branding and image management. It is my passion.
Your energy is enthusiastic. It is contagious. And I hope that people, I know those that are just listening are picking up something, but if you're watching Anne, you can see just how excited she gets when she talks about things she loves. So thank you for sharing that with us. I'm going to close out the show, but before I do, do you have any last alibis or anything you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
I would like to say that success and your next step for success is within you. It is already within you. You just have to clarify it, define it, and then be it, and take all of the steps using that personal brand strategy to amplify it. And so everyone else will see it and you will attract your opportunity.
She's absolutely right. Thank you, Anne. My name is Cheryl Cross. You're listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. This was our one expert segment for the hour. We're going to be rolling into the next segment, which is our 1+ year veteran. They've been out about a year, but no more than 4 after. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Thank you so much, Cheryl, for having me on the program.
Welcome to Exchange.
There are some people I stalk on Facebook. There are some people I stalk on LinkedIn. And there's some people that I tune into because their show is so good. This is a gentleman that I've been haunting, or actually just IMing through LinkedIn for a couple weeks. And I'm so pleased that he's here to join us to talk about his transition story from the Navy. Please welcome fellow podcaster, fellow author, and just a wonderful, nice man, John McCaskill. Hi, John. Thanks so much for
joining. Hey, Cheryl. Thanks for having me. I'm excited for this conversation.
I tuned into you and Will talked about men talking mindfulness, which is not just your brand, but it is your mission. So why don't you tell us what you're up to, and then we'll jump into your transition story.
My mission is to positively affect 1 million men's lives, and that is through the podcast, Men Talking Mindfulness. It's through retreats. It's through workshops. It's through keynote speaking. It's through one-on-one and group coaching. You know, much like you mentioned just before we hit record, you had a goal for how many books you wanted to sell, and you surpassed that in the first week or so. And with positively affecting those 1 million men's lives, you know, there's obviously a trickle-down effect there, positively affecting their spouses, their children, their colleagues, their churches, their communities. So ultimately, there's a larger goal in mind, but I'm starting with the 1 million men.
We talked a little bit about mindfulness, and you said something important that I want to bring up. Our friend Matt Stevens of the Honor Foundation made sure that mindfulness was one of the highlights of the training through the Honor Foundation. Talk about that for us.
Yeah. So the Honor Foundation, ironically, I got to go a little bit back in my story with Matt. I worked for Matt as his executive officer in Bahrain when he was a commanding officer. And then I worked for him again as a special activities guy when he was a commodore for the Navy SEALs and special boat teams. He transitioned out. I assumed that he was just going to have the world handed to him on an oyster, right? He had been a SEAL. He was a Naval Academy graduate. He had gone through special forces selection and everything. And he had this amazing pedigree. And when he got out, he went and worked for a drone company originally. And I could see that he wasn't terribly happy with that job. He ended up having to travel a lot, having to do a lot of sales. And he ended up finally becoming the CEO of the Honor Foundation. And just before he became the CEO of the Honor Foundation, he knew that I was about to get out in the next 2 years or so. He knew that I'd planned on exiting the Navy. And he called me up, like, hey, let's do coffee. So we sat down for coffee and he says, so what's your plan? And I was like, boss, my plan, I don't have a plan yet. I've got 2 years to figure that out. And he said, well, that 2 years is going to evaporate in the blink of an eye. You need to start figuring out what your plan is. And again, he had been my boss twice. So I really look up to Matt, still do. And what he said to me was like gospel. So that afternoon, I went home and I wrote down a military plan of action and milestones. I was like, okay, 2 years from now, this is where I want to be. I want to retire. I want to be in commercial real estate. I need to get these licenses. I need to speak with these people. I planned it all out. And as you well know, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. And I sat down with some commercial real estate folks, and there's nothing wrong with that line of work, not at all. But I figured out really quickly that that is not what I wanted to do. And so then I was like, well, if that's not what I want to do, maybe I want to look at private equity or venture capital or financial management or all these other jobs. And I spoke to all these people in these different industries. And again, I didn't figure out exactly where I wanted to land, but I figured out where I didn't want to land. And again, nothing against those jobs. They're great jobs, but they just weren't for me. At the same time, I was practicing mindfulness and meditation for my own mental health. I had a lot of stress and anxiety, depression, a survivor's guilt, moral injury. And what I had been introduced to was mindfulness and meditation to address that. And it had changed my life, but quite literally also saved my life. So I felt it was a duty and an obligation now to maybe start sharing it with people. And I started to share it with people just kind of loosely saying, hey, look, this is what I'm doing. And then I realized quickly that maybe this is what I could do as a career. And Matt actually invited me in to speak to the Honor Foundation before I ever went through their program. I went and spoke as a mindfulness and meditation teacher. And that's when I realized, yeah, I could definitely do this. But at the same time, I think Matt realized, hey, this is a piece that was missing from the Honor Foundation's program. And I'm thrilled to hear that since I spoke, they have since implemented some mindfulness and meditation into the program as a regular piece.
But you know, you've got a big lofty goal. You were going after really big, sexy jobs, high paying plus K jobs. Mindfulness may not pay the bills. I mean,
yeah.
How did you work those two paradigms together?
Yeah, funny enough, I came out to Colorado Springs for the Commit Foundation. They had an event, also a fantastic transition program. I had at that point decided Colorado Springs was where I was going to retire. And I had set up a lunch with a local commercial real estate guy. And he's like, so what are you going to do with the commercial real estate? And I was like, oh, I got to be honest, I've decided not to go into commercial real estate. And he said, so what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to become a mindfulness and meditation teacher. And he looked at me like dumbfounded and said, there's no money in that. I said, yeah, I understand that. There's probably not a lot of money to be made, but I didn't join the military to make money. I joined the military because I wanted to serve. Now that I'm retiring, I'm not going to go and do something just to make money. And the people that I have run into that went after the shiny object because there was a lot of money to be made, there are more people that have decided that is not what they wanted to do than there are that said, hey, this is where I want to stay. But the money doesn't make the job any better. So I wanted to find a job that I felt was rewarding, that I had a positive impact on people's lives, and teaching mindfulness and meditation because of the positive effect it had on my life, I knew that it was going to positively affect others' lives. So I went down that route and again did the full military plan of action and milestones, the POANM is what we call it in the military, and said, how can I make money doing this? I looked at other mindfulness teachers, went through the commit program and talked about becoming a mindfulness teacher. And they're like, hey, well, what if you taught stuff on these different apps? Or what if you went and did workshops or retreats? And so I used a lot of what they gave me and also what the Honor Foundation gave me as far as stepping stones toward what ultimately became what I do now. And that is the podcasts, the retreats, the workshops, keynote speaking and coaching. And then I do have some virtual meditations online that I don't get a whole lot of money for those, but it's another revenue stream. So in the military, we all get very set on having a singular revenue stream, or most of us do, and that's the military paycheck. And now since I've retired, I've learned about having multiple revenue streams. And that's what helps to put the roof over my head and the food on my table and the food for my kids on my table, the toys of my kids for Christmas. So having those multiple revenue streams, any singular one of them doesn't pay everything, but all of them combined is very helpful.
What was your biggest surprise? We interviewed Steve Brown, one of your fellow SEALs.
Oh, yeah. Brownie was at my first team with me.
Camp Brown Bear USA.org. He was on my first show and I asked him what his biggest surprise was. And he talked about the sort of physical elements of PTSD and how he wished somebody would have told him.
Right.
What have you found that just no class can teach?
Oh, I got knocked on my butt by the emotional aspect of transition. And I'm not saying, hey, what job am I going to do? When I transitioned, I had planned on transitioning for 2 years, like I mentioned. I thought I was ready. And then I left the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the camaraderie, the group that I was a part of. And they kept going, right? They had a mission. The military still has a mission. I had friends still going into harm's way. And here I am sitting in Monument, Colorado, the small town here, and I'm going to Starbucks and I'm ordering my special coffee a certain way. And I realized there was almost like a sense of betrayal and a two-sided sense of betrayal. What I mean by that is I felt like I had betrayed them by leaving the military, because they were still out there putting themselves in harm's way. And the flip side of that is I felt betrayed by them, because I felt when I left, they kept moving and nobody stopped to give me a pat on the back and celebrate my getting out. I actually got out at the height of COVID. I got out in August of 2020. My retirement ceremony, quote unquote, was literally a text from my boss. It says, thanks for your service. And I was driving out of Virginia Beach when I got that. I felt betrayed. And that might be a little arrogant or even narcissistic to say that, but I felt, a buddy of mine put it a really good way. The special operations community is like you jump onto a bullet train, and the bullet train is moving so fast. And when you're on that bullet train, you don't notice it. You're on it and you're moving along at the same speed. And then when you decide to get off that bullet train, you jump off and you roll and you hurt and you look up and that bullet train is gone.
Gone.
That's exactly how it felt. It felt as though I had betrayed the military by leaving, had betrayed my brothers and sisters by leaving, and the military as a whole had betrayed me by not acknowledging my leaving, which again sounds a little arrogant, but it feels as though you were a cog in a machine, and that machine, as soon as you left, that machine had that cog replaced and kept going and nobody noticed. So that was an emotional shock to me that I hadn't anticipated. And they really don't talk about in any of the TAPS programs, the other programs that I've been through, they talk about emotionally planning, but they don't really talk about the sense of betrayal that you may feel and the two-sided sense of betrayal.
No one has ever brought that up here in this forum. So thank you so much for bringing that up. It reminds me of a story. I was in my early 20s going into the music industry from broadcasting. I was a music director on radio. And then I moved to Los Angeles, which was my dream, to get out of my hometown of Las Vegas. And I'm standing at Geffen Records. Al Khoury, who helped break the Beatles, he taught all the women how to scream, Capitol Records, stood in front of us young, fresh-faced 20-year-olds. We were not promoters, but they were going to teach us promotion, radio promotion, right? And he said to me, this is the music industry. And the one word I want you to remember is industry. And this industry, it eats people and it shits money. And if you love music, leave. If you're a fan, leave. If I find you standing next to one of our artists in a picture, you're gone. We're here to make money. And I thought to myself, wow. I went into radio because I loved music. I became a music director because I loved listening to music. I went on the radio because I loved radio. You're like, you just leave it at the door. And it sounds a little bit like you have to sort of target harden your brain to be. And this is exactly what you and I are trying to do for this community. I mean, that's a crazy little story. And nobody hopefully is going to go in the music industry and think that, you know, it eats people and shits money. That's just bizarre. But tell me something about how can we make this better for people? There's so many elements that maybe are missing. Or do you think as a mindfulness coach that each person just needs to go through it and experience it so it makes them who they will become? Tell me more about
that. Yeah, Ryan Holiday's book, if you've ever read The Obstacle is the Way, he's a big stoic, and I've recently started getting into stoicism. Obstacles, the challenges, the adversities that we face, those are what make us who we are. If you look back at your life, you look kind of over your shoulder at the obstacles and the adversity, the challenges that we've overcome, that's what got you to this point right here. And if you look back over your shoulder and you don't see any obstacles or any challenges or any adversity, you're probably not a human being, at least not anyone that's lived any time on this earth, because we all face it. It is what defines us. I'm not wishing obstacles or challenges or adversity of any sort on any person, but I will say that for the most part, I believe that we all have to go through it. Will, my co-host for my podcast, Men Talking Mindfulness, he says the only way out is through.
Through.
And quite often, right. And quite often we push back. We push back against pain. We push back against sadness. We push back against challenges and adversity. And by pushing back, we just end up having to face that later. It just comes back in another form later instead of going through it. And by going through it, then we can get out of it. That's the only way. That is the only way.
When you're going through hell, keep going.
That's right.
Before I don't think Stoic said that. Right? It wasn't Marcus Aurelius, was it?
I don't think so.
It wasn't Abraham Lincoln or anyone else. Exactly. Maybe Mr. T. I don't know. Mike Tyson. Hey, what's in the future? I mean, you're so little time in the civilian world, but you seem so comfortable. And I want to applaud you because you are so grounded and centered. I feel calm. I felt calm yesterday listening to your podcast and watching you on LinkedIn live audio. What's your secret? Or is this just you? I'm curious. Is it who you've become in the last few years?
I wish that I could say I'm this way all the time. I'm not. I'm a human being. I lose my temper. I lose my cool. I get frustrated still. A mindfulness and meditation teacher who tells you that mindfulness and meditation is the end all be all, that you will never face any stress or anxiety, I think they're full of BS. But it does help to change your relationship with those. I see that I'm getting stressed. I can go and breathe, and I can change how my body and my mind and my nervous system react. And change it into a response versus a reaction. I can change how those make me feel in my body, my mind, and my nervous system and my emotions. I think the mindfulness and meditation has helped me to feel more confident in my skin, in my body, in who I am, and who I am authentically. I have worn a mask a lot in my life. I've worn this false armor of false bravado quite a lot. And now shedding that mask and shedding that armor, I feel lighter and I feel that I can be more authentic self with you here on this call today, on social media, with my friends, with my family, with my children. You know, I think that when you're able to take a step back, do some deep internal reflection and see who you are portraying yourself to be to the world versus who you truly are, remove the difference between the two of them. That's huge. And it allows you to walk through life lighter and happier and more fulfilled.
Authenticity is the goal for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You wrote a book, Unleashing Inner Strength.
Yes.
You little warrior, you. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's right here.
I'm so proud of you.
It's right here. It's Unleashing Mastering Inner Strength, A Navy SEAL's Guide to Preparedness, Resilience, Grit, and Compassion Through Mindfulness. And I know that's a mouthful. It's a short book, very short book. If you're watching this, you can see just how thin the book is. It's about 67 pages. You can read it in one sitting. It's very easy. And I wrote it that way intentionally, but I also wrote it that way because I do public speaking, and that is one of my topics. And I've always been wanting to write a book, but I didn't want to write the standard Navy SEAL book. And don't get me wrong, there's stories about Navy SEAL training and stuff in here, but I didn't want to just write about Navy SEAL training. This guy that was in my audience, one of my audiences, he said, if you have a talk, you have a book. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He said, sit down and take your talk and transcribe it essentially into a book. And that's what I did. I sat down in one day, I took my speech and I transcribed it and then, you know, massaged it so that it would read better than just a speech, and then published it the next day. It is one of my keynote talks essentially in a book version. And I give it away at some of my keynotes. But yeah, it's all about being prepared and what that does for you in times of adversity, but also what it does for you as a human being. Resilience and grit, what those two do for you in your work, in your life, in your family, you know, getting knocked down, getting back up, that's huge. If you're able to do that, that's resilience. If you're able to set goals and then break it down into the more digestible chunks, that's the grit. And then the piece that kind of confuses people, they're like, well, all those preparedness, resilience, and grit, that's all kind of tough guy stuff. And then you talk about compassion. Where does that come in? Well, I feel having compassion for yourself and your fellow man, and I use the man term man as a gender neutral term. Having compassion is the only way to lead. True leaders are compassionate. They understand what their people are going through, and then they want to help them out, because that's what a leader truly is. A leader isn't somebody who has people working for them. A leader is somebody who works for those under them so that they can clear the obstacles, so that they can enable them to do the jobs that they need to do. And that's what I believe is a missing piece amongst so many quote unquote leaders these days, is having compassion for your people. So I included that in the book, compassion for your people and compassion for yourself.
For yourself. It has to start with yourself. Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure. Compassion is tough guy stuff.
It is. It is when you break it down. But at first glance, people are like, what is that? But yeah, it's hard. It's hard to be compassionate.
Look at the Stoics. You know, they were the original, right? They were the OG servant leaders.
That's right.
They really were. They were there to support people, grow them, develop them, take their knowledge and pass it on. It was very important for the Stoics to write scrolls and scripts and books and tablets, whatever they did, to pass on their knowledge so right. that people could be better. And isn't that what we want to be as servant leaders, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Have people learn from your experiences. And that's another piece that I talk about in the preparedness and how preparedness and mindfulness tie together. And in that, to be prepared, you have to do some type of mental time travel. You've got to learn from your past so that your present and your future can be better. But you also have to learn from your past so that you can make the present and the future better for your team and for your family and for your community. That's right in line with the Stoics and what they've taught, is you've got to learn from your past to make your present and your future better.
And know yourself in the process.
Absolutely.
You're on a great journey. What an honor. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, the honor was all mine, Cheryl. Thank you so much.
The themes that I heard were, don't be afraid of the struggle. The struggle will teach you lessons. You know, move through it. Maybe not do this alone. I hear this from a lot of other people, but
nobody can do it alone.
Yeah. So for those people who are wanting to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, I had a whole bunch of different links all over the place, and I've compiled them all. If you just go to johnmccaskill.com/links, that'll take you to my website, to the podcast, to the book, to the retreats that we offer and everything else. So that's the easiest way, is just johnmccaskill.com/links.
And that's MacSkill.
That's right. And John, J-O-N. No H.
I don't want to stop talking to you. I'm going to get you back like we did with Robert Hamilton Owens.
Oh, Scott, I love Robert. He's so great.
He loves you too.
I did a triathlon with him back in October of 2022. He is such a stud. I love that guy.
He's incredible. So we're talking about a 72-year-old man who's one of the OG endurance athletes. I have an hour-long interview with him. He was talking a lot about veteran suicide and his documentary, One is Too Many.
Yeah, he just rode across the Atlantic for that to raise funds and awareness about that.
3,000 miles. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
and
incredible.
Probably another one of your buddies, Mark Devine, gave me an intro and outro because it does.
Mark's fantastic.
It helps the Courage Foundation. So, and that's my nonprofit fundraiser for the year.
Nice.
And is these guys. But anyway, I'm digressing. This is about you. And I like that you talked about tough guy stuff and M-A-C-A-S-K-I-L-L, John. Tune into his podcast, meet his co-host, host Will, who I just kind of met yesterday, and tune in and share the gospel, everyone. I mean, we're all here to hold hands and point people in the right way. And I think the underlying theme from absolutely everybody I talk to is they didn't succeed by doing this by themselves, and no plan ever really works out. So be prepared to have another one and another one and another one. Be flexible and open to having a plan B. I say this at the end of every show. You all are so strong. You're brave, you're skilled, and you're trained. And these are things that will get you through this career transition. And these are things that the civilian workforce really needs. How you apply it is up to you. And it's as independent and as individual as fingerprints, as John and other folks are showing you. So thank you. Last alibis before we close up the segment.
No, I don't have anything, Cheryl. Thank you so much for the interview. Thank you so much for this opportunity and for the platform. I really appreciate you helping to share my vision and what it is that I'm doing. So this has been great. Thank you.
It's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you, sir. Our goal is to get 100 voices of military transition as people move into civilian careers, and John is just one. So stay tuned. We're going to roll out after a brief segment, and we'll go into someone who's been out at least 5 years. We'll be right back. So we're closing out our hour plus. I got to rename this to the military to civilian career transition hour and a half, because this power hour is just getting longer and longer, the more information and the more people we bring to you. So this is a guy, a former Marine that I've been stalking on LinkedIn for some time because he's adding so much value to this community. I'd like to introduce you to a guy with his own business, Joe Fetzer. Hey, Joe, how are you doing today?
Thank you so much.
We're talking with you today because of not only the traction that you're getting in the advocacy world, talking to people who are making difficult transitions. And you know, the focus of this show is to raise the voice and maybe hear a little bit more about your transition story. So why don't you go ahead and launch and tell us what you did, how you transitioned out of the Marine Corps 7 years ago, and what you're doing now?
Yeah, really appreciate that. You know, I was in the Marine Corps for almost 10 years. That's a large chunk of your life. And I should say, you know, I went in right after high school too. So I graduated, and then 5 days later, I was down at Parris Island, South Carolina. You know, really ramped right up into, you know, at that time, which was in 2009. So there was a high operational tempo. You know, pretty much all units across the force were just going from pre-deployment workup to deployment, pre-deployment workup to deployment. And when I got to 1st Battalion, 10th Marines, that's exactly where we were at, you know, pre-deployment workup, getting ready to go to Afghanistan. And that's just what that looked like at the time. But I think it's even important to note there, I was just an 18-year-old kid. You know, I was having fun, right? Running around with a bunch of guys and doing all these things. What else did I have to do? But 10 years later, I ended up being faced with that transition, and it was time to leave the service and step into civilian life.
What made you drop your papers?
I was actually stationed in Okinawa, Japan, put on a med board. They said that you were going to be medically separated, and then I was flown back to Quantico to make that transition, just because that was the main Marine Corps hub closest to my home of record. So it was kind of unexpected in the sense that being in for 10 years, you know, at that point in time, most people that reach that threshold decide to, you know, stick it out for another 10 or 20. So yeah, things kind of abruptly changed and life shifted. And I found myself very much in the midst of that.
Interesting. You're an organizational development expert and you work with companies. And I'm just seeing a link between having something happen to you that you had no control over to creating systems that are very predictive. Now, I am an armchair psychologist. I am certainly not a clinical person in any shape or form. But what took you to do what you were doing into what you're doing now?
I've really niched out in the whole people operations industry. You know, now I have the company, Innovative Organizational Development, where we focus on three things: leadership training and development, management, leadership consulting, and certified professional coaching. And each one of those service areas are people-centric. I went from being a bomb tech in the Marine Corps to being a people tech in industry. And guess which one's more difficult? Being the people tech. Yeah, people. Just making some connections now with your audience, you know, probably a lot of military people transitioning, already transitioned. Organizations and people are a puzzle, just as much as an explosive device is, all right, where you have to figure it out. You use your tools and resources, maybe do a little bit of diagnostics work, figure out how you're going to approach this, and then you execute. I've just found that being in that space and doing that with companies and individuals has not only been fulfilling, but in a way, very congruent to what I was doing in the Marine Corps.
I like how you scaffold what you did to what you're doing. Has this kept you sane? In a way, to say, I learned this in the Marine Corps, I'm doing this in a different way in the civilian world.
I'll prescribe to that about 50-50. All right, percent yes, 50% no. In the sense that when somebody leaves the military, of course, you want to come to understand how your skills are going to transition to a different career path, right? And that's 50% of it. Maybe that's the first half. But then the next half is figuring out, what else do I need to learn? You know, what do I need to unlearn? What do I need to do differently? What else is going to qualify me to move forward now, you know, in the civilian life? Because frankly, it looks different. That career roadmap is not just laid out in front of you. These things aren't written down into a linear equation, like what I like to call embrace the squiggle, where we have to figure it out a little bit. So how are those things that you've taken from your time in the service serving you now as a civilian, but also how am I equipping myself with new skills, a new network? What am I learning and what am I doing with these things? If any of that makes sense.
It does. I wrote a whole book on this and trying to unpack everything that you're saying into, and you all can go check out my book at some point, Civilian Mission. It's a 3-year guide for military professionals, people who consider themselves military professionals who are planning a civilian career. I'm curious, when did you realize you were a military professional? And when did you realize you wanted to have a professional career and become an entrepreneur? This is a huge leap.
When I was in the Marine Corps, I don't think I ever said to myself, I'm a military professional. You know, I just never thought that. Because again, right after high school, that's just what I did. You know,
yeah.
It's just my job. You know, but then it definitely came to a point in time where I did recognize myself as a military professional. As I reflect back to my time, I definitely categorize me being a military professional. And that's definitely carried with me throughout each of my endeavors in the civilian world now. And I also think it's worth noting that, you know, I've been out for almost 6 years now. It's not like I had it all figured out. It's not like I feel like I have it all figured out right now. It's just this idea of figuring it out, you know, that piece of the puzzle, being engaged in work that is meaningful and fulfilling. That's just been the direction I've gone and the steps that I've taken. And as you said, you know, that's very much been niched out in the entrepreneurial space. I've had the opportunity to work with a couple great companies in the whole corporate arena, which again has been great. But my call to action as a Marine Corps veg, but now a civilian, has definitely been that entrepreneurial space, that entrepreneurial mind. Set. That's what excites me, and that's what led me to start Innovative Organizational Development.
As a civilian working within the Department of Defense or working with you all trying to get you jobs, I noticed a lot of similarities between the branches. And if you said to me a year ago, you're going to find more Marines that are entrepreneurs than you will in the Air Force or the Army, the Navy, Space Force, Coast Guard, you just name it, I'd laugh. But I'm finding that there's more Marines that are entrepreneurs. And maybe just might be my algorithm on LinkedIn. I'm not sure. But I'm finding that a lot of the Marines, I spoke to Will Allen, I've talked to Bruce Thompson, I've talked to Steve Yonke, Art Bankey is another one who's a great Marine Corps entrepreneur. You're all entrepreneurs. Like, it, why is that?
I don't know. I mean, it'd be smug or arrogant for me to say that Marines just have that first in, first out, go-getter attitude, but especially from doing something that was inherently dangerous, right, on a daily basis. And it gives you a level of excitement. And again, you need to figure it out, right? There's a puzzle in front of you and people are depending on you to come up with a solution to make it work. That's what business is. It's not a bomb. I mean, it can't explode, just go all over the place. But there's something about that excitement, that entrepreneurial spirit, that go-getter attitude, where you have to figure it out. all right, even taking this a step back, you know, the explosive ordnance disposal field motto used to be initial success or total failure. And in that career, in that field, that's kind of true. But I don't prescribe to that anymore in the sense that I've adopted this mindset of progress over perfectionism. And every day, it doesn't matter if you're the author of a book, if you own an organizational development practice, what are you doing on a daily basis to move the ball forward? To not just make your organization better, but provide something of value to people or other companies that are inclined to use that service. And there's a lot of figuring it out that goes along with that. I think that's why I've, you know, really settled well into that entrepreneurial space, honestly.
I'm seeing a lot of parallel now that you talk about what your MOS was and your technical specialty in bomb. You know, I've never dismantled anything that could kill me. I don't know that many people that are listening have, but you said something that really resonated with me. It's either success or failure. There's no gray here. You either, you do it or you die. It's that. So I would imagine that there's steps to dismantling and disposing of a weapon. And that's organizational development. So it feels right to me that you are very structured in your approach. How might someone take that? Because here's where I see people getting in the soup, back in the soup, not just the soup of leaving the military, getting their first job, but not being happy in it, maybe not making the greatest choice. But what can we give them that is a little bit more of a planned action? And I know there's no answers and everyone's different. Help me out here.
You're right. You know, you have to come up with a plan to dispose of a piece of ordnance, right? There's going to be a strict procedural guideline that you should follow, that you have to follow, you know, to reach your desired outcome. And again, you being a subject matter expert, you wrote a book on this, you're very well versed in the arena. People have to have a plan when we transition from the military to the civilian world, as I call it. The difference is you're not going to stick 100 to each next step in that plan. All right. Things are going to change. You're going to run into things that are unexpected. You're not going to like that first job. You're going to want to do a complete career change. That takes, again, embracing that squiggle and figuring it out and understanding that now as a civilian, you have the freedom and latitude to do that. It just requires a different mindset or a different way of thinking, which I find empowering when people adopt that type of mindset. When they adopt this idea that I am now in command and control of me, and I'm going to figure out what steps I'm going to take to come up with the plan that best fits my mold. Because that's all that matters now, you know, is how you're moving forward. You're not part of the platoon anymore. You don't have a fire team.
I'm curious. So organizational development for companies, but you're doing this for people too. Tell me about your coaching practice.
People coaching was probably the first thing that I really did step into when I left the Marine Corps, mainly because I went to do some education in that arena. Duquesne University, it was a graduate program, the professional coach certification program. And that's really opened doors for me. But why I love people coaching is that you really accomplish three things. One, you inventory where a person's at now, you figure out where they want to go in the future, and then what steps you're taking to fill that gap. All right. And it's totally focused on that individual. So when you sit down with a professional coach, you're going to do those three things, but they're going to be asking you the hows, what's, where's, when's, and why's, and everything you need to do in between to make sure you reach your goals. Very humanistic, I guess, very connected, you know, in that way.
You're working on a PhD. Tell us about your PhD.
I want to give a real quick shout out to the GI Bill, because if you're a service member and you've tabled that thing or you haven't used it, it really is as good as people say, in the sense that this is a benefit for you to be able to take advantage of and earn, you know, some more education after you leave your service. So I have used my GI Bill. And even while I was in, I used tuition assistance, but I've continued to use my GI Bill through graduate school, through graduate certificate programs, and now my PhD. I was privileged and fortunate enough to be accepted into program one at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, Administration and Leadership Studies. And now after 3 years of curriculum, I'm stepping into that dissertation phase, which you have to do it and you have to get it done. But yeah, I'm working on my dissertation and it's been quite the journey.
Well, this is a timeless recording, so we won't say what year you're in or what year it is, but I'm hopeful that whenever you're listening to this and you check in with Joe, that he's accomplished it. I know that that's a toughie. Congratulations on all you've done. You shared some really valuable information, and you know, we're obviously going to have you back in some way, shape, or form. I hope that when the clouds clear, we'll either hear you on your own podcast or be able to check in with you. But in the interim, you did mention that you were able to do some one-on-one training, not only through your coaching company, but maybe some mentoring. How might people find you? And for those that are listening, go ahead and spell your name so people can find you on LinkedIn.
Yeah, my LinkedIn is going to be Joseph, J-O-S-E-P-H-M, Fetzer, F-E-T-Z-E-R. I think I have MBA PCC after that on LinkedIn, but you'll be able to find me there. And you can always go to my website, www.innood.com. And you can email me at joe@innood.com. That's INNOOD, that's short for Innovative Organizational Development.
There you go. I'm incredibly proud of you. I've known you for literally 26 minutes, aside from what we do on LinkedIn. So I just want to say thank you so much. I knew that you would be dynamic and full of information, as everyone is here on the show wanting to give back. Go ahead and give us any last alibis before we close out your segment.
I just want to say thank you to you in the closeout. Yes, because what you're doing is putting a topic, which is transitioning veterans, and that doesn't matter if you're doing it now or somebody like me 6 years down the road, at the forefront of a discussion that frankly needs to happen and needs to keep happening. So thank you for what you're doing, Cheryl. And shout out to you.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. I did this because the voices weren't being heard, and the voices that were being heard had truly forgotten about what it was like. And I believe in the power of storytelling. Stories will teach you more than a book, even though I just wrote one and I'm going to write another one, a course, or being told what to do. It's what people have done that you'll remember. So that's why this One Voices program is so important to me. So thank you for being a part of it. I will say this, you didn't know me from anyone other than a LinkedIn connection. I don't even think we were connected, but I have at this point, this will drop at some point in the future from its recording, but at the time of this recording, I've elevated the voices of 24 people. Those are veterans plus experts. So 32 people total, and not one of them have ever hesitated to say yes. And that was, for me, that's really the secret to this sauce, is that, you know, when people need a voice or a platform, you create it and you just let them talk. So hopefully this helps somebody. Thank you so much for that acknowledgement. All right. Do reach out to, even though he's working on his dissertation for his PhD, he's offered some mentoring advice. The thing is here is to stay connected and realize that your journey is going to look different in the soup, in the first year, in the fourth year, in the fifth year, in the 10th year. It's constantly transitioning. So the time and space in the military is very important, but it's not going to dictate who you are now if you're outside of service. It only helps if you can refer back to it. And what Joe has talked about is the fact that he's brought what he's doing currently to what he did in order to build that platform. And that's why each and every one of you is going to have a different transition story. I'm Cheryl Cross. I am your, not an expert, but I am your host for the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. We're going to take a short break and then close out the show for the day. Thank you.